This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751, or send in your question through the website www.beatyourgenes.org. All right, Dr. Lyle, how are you doing today?
Good. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. You know, it's been actually freezing cold here in Southern California, but apparently the rest of the world, that's normal weather.
All right. Well, glad to hear it. Glad to hear you have some excitement there.
Yeah, we're a little bit soft around the edges here in Southern California. I think it's like 50s and everyone's, you know, I'm certainly freezing cold. I just can't do it. But the East Coasters don't have a problem.
Yeah. All right. Well, what do we got going today?
Today we've got a caller on hold, actually. So we're going to, as you know, any listener listening, if you ever have a question or comment, callers will take priority. So the topic of today's show is how to assess your own personality. And we are going to take call first, and then we're over the BF10 or the 10 item personality index. So it's kind of question by question so we can have a listener kind of assess your own personality. And Dr. Lyle, you can tell some of the significance behind these questions and they came up with these answers. Does that sound good?
Yes, very good. I'm having a little trouble hearing you. I hope it's just me, but we'll do the best we can.
Okay. Can you hear me now? It's a little bit better.
It's still breaking up.
Okay. Give me 1 second. I'm going to put our caller on the line.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Okay. I can't hear anybody.
Can you hear me now?
Tom's not there. There we go.
I can hear somebody there. Okay.
I can hear you guys.
Tom, you're on with Dr. Lyle.
Yeah, we've got acoustical problems, Nate.
Yeah, just a second.
Okay, I think I'm not sure if I have problems. Is anybody having trouble hearing me?
You're coming through loud and clear.
Okay, very good. And what's your name, sir?
My name is Tom.
Tom, very good. Okay. I think that I can hear you, and I think our trouble we're having is just with Nate's connection. So go ahead, and if you had a question for us, we'll go ahead and try to answer that.
Okay, it's not related to the 10 personality questions, so
no worries.
It has to be on topic or can it be anything. Okay, well, you know, I was wondering, my question is, you know, as far as finding happiness, it sounds like your strategy is, you know, between a pair bonding and a tournament species, it's mostly pair bond dominant with that chippy strategy you're talking about. What is that? I mean, is there another strategy that's more tournament style, tournament species style, which is kind of like what you see with some of these pickup artist communities and things like that?
Yeah. Okay. Here's what we're trying to accomplish, and obviously everybody has to walk their own road dependent upon their own personalities. And so it's going to turn out to be the case that the typical member of our species has a pretty strong predilection towards what we would call intermediate term monogamy. In other words, they have a thing that we call love. Love is a That's a word that we use for several different types of experiences, and including loving a tuna salad sandwich. But when we're talking about romance, which is implies sexuality with people, then we're talking about a particular kind of a relationship where sex is a major component of the relationship between people. It's not the only major issue that's going on there, but it's a very important component. And it's going to turn out that for evolutionary reasons, that is pretty emotionally significant for people, in the sense that they don't tend to have the following attitude. They tend to have a possessive attitude towards their partner's sexuality, and they have emotions that come natural to the species. Sexual jealousy is a natural fallout of a pattern of desiring exclusivity that's characteristic of humans. Now, so it's going to turn out that when you pry open the heads of humans, it doesn't take too long to find out that what they would really like would like a deep connection with one individual, and for that one individual to satisfy all kinds of needs that they have, be their best friend, be their exclusive sexual partner, and particularly in principle, they would generally like their mate to certainly be exclusive with them. Whether or not they would be exclusive with their mate is, of course, a matter of their own sort of individual predilection and debate. Now, so it's going to turn out that that desire for that type of relationship and its ability to satisfy it is not that easy, because it's going to turn out that human beings are going to be pretty tough negotiators. And so they're going to be difficult to satisfy in those domains and with those kinds of relationships. However, some people might say, you know, the truth is that I have a great deal of openness to experience, and even though I desire and I have those feelings, I've got some essentially pair bond circuits inside my head. I've got some other pretty powerful novelty and variety seeking circuits as well, which would be normal human variation to have those things. And so there's going to be people that are going to feel like there's a different way to operate this life. And this life, you've got trade-offs, and you only have so much time and energy. So your job is to use the time and energy you have in pursuit of goals that will cause you to have interactions between you and the world, mostly the social world, that will potentially optimize your life experience. That's the game that is on the chessboard that each of us confronts. Some people will look at this chessboard and they will say, you know what, I don't think an exclusive, romantic, deep connection is the optimum strategy for me. And so there's been people that flouted that and just said, I'm not going to do it. Hugh Hefner, in principle, would be one such individual. Now, it's interesting that at various times in his life, Hugh found himself in love with some girl and married. So I think he married several times. And then this is a guy that is very open to experience, and also attractive guy with a tremendous amount of resources, and sitting in a location where he could give a lot of young, highly attractive females a lot of status. And so as a result of that, he had access to an awful, you know, basically an endless high variety parade of extremely attractive women. And so it was difficult for him to actually sustain his desires on that score for very long. And so his romances would last for a few years, and then he'd be back in the casual mating game again. And so, but that's an example of the two different strategies located inside of one head. and how circumstances of the environment sort of float him back and forth between those two different strategies, never quite settling into one strategy for good, which shows you that those two things can be pretty competitive strategies. So on this show, one of the things that I'm not doing is I'm not attempting to try to coach any individuals into figuring out how to optimize their success within a casual mating strategy, general life strategy. In other words, it's a perfectly legitimate pursuit. In other words, I have no in principle objection to anybody doing this. I don't think that it's the wrong thing to do. It's just, it turns out it's probably not the optimal strategy for most people. Most human beings are not as naturally open to experience as a Hugh Hefner. And so even though they may have a great, I'm speaking in men in particular, they may have a lot of sexual impulses across a wide variety of females, et cetera, and they could really see themselves operating just fine in that paradigm. The truth is that the majority of men are not that open to experience and actually are desirous of a sort of more committed relationship, at least intermittently. In other words, 3 years, 5 years at a time, et cetera. Does this make sense?
Yep, that's great.
Okay, is that all? Yeah, this is all. I have no, just to reiterate, no objection at all towards casual mating pursuit. And the cost benefit for every individual is going to be, very much different. I can remember, I think Dustin Hoffman said, thank God I wasn't as attractive as Tom Cruise, because if I were, I'd just be chasing these women all over town. I never would have accomplished anything. He's just sort of looking at his life, realizing he didn't have that, and understanding how tempting that would be. But as we see in a Tom Cruise, we saw him go through this life with essentially as a serial monogamist, where his relationships would last about 5 years at a time or so, and which is about probably very consistent with the basically stock pair bonding machinery that resides inside of human beings. And so we see somebody that essentially has infinite choice, and yet and he could have played this game literally one casual mating strategy relationship after the next, different one every week, and he could have done that, but he didn't. And he didn't because he would find himself in this very interesting place that humans can get to, because we are a pair bond potential species, where there are more deep and impactful moods of happiness in a deep romance than can take place in casual mating strategy. The reasons why this is true psychologically, why there are different and deeper emotions, has to do with esteem dynamics. And that is that if you are in a casual mating situation, you are superficially qualifying for intelligence and personality, and you are absolutely qualifying in terms of the lust features of your physical form. And so as a result of that, if you are a male and have attractive females that are responding to that, that's pretty cool. In other words, you are able to get to the female sexual treasury with a minimum amount of investment. And males that can do that, will often do that and will often have quite a career. But then very often, even males that are extremely successful in that regard will trip over a female that the relationship between them has the potential for there to be an esteem dynamic between the two of them that is much more profound. And that's what we call love. And that's a different experience, and it literally is different neural circuits. And it's literally like saying the difference between sound and taste. In other words, they're two very different experiences. And in the context of a romantic love relationship, you can get to have both at the same time instead of one. And that's the multidimensional nature of human romance is what lures men in, and willing to trade away that freedom, as enticing as it might be. All right? Does that answer your questions?
Thank you.
That's good. All right.
Yes.
Hey, listen, thank you very much for calling.
Tom, thank you very much for the call. Dr. Lau, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you great. All clear.
Okay, good. Sorry for that. Tom, great question. Thank you for calling in. And I don't know if I broke up at the very beginning, but regardless of our stated topic on the podcast, callers will always take priority. And so if you guys ever have questions, just call in and we'll take you first and then go on with the topic.
Very cool.
All right. Tom, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Okay, so today's show is about assessing our own personality. And on the comment section or the description, I put on there a link to the University of Texas, the PDF file for the looking at the 10-item personality inventory index.
Mm-hmm.
So I just figured we will go over it today, and you can kind of coach us in the ins and outs and why things are significant and how we can assess our own personality.
Well, did you send me that link, Nate?
Did I send you the link?
You did.
I just figured
you
were an expert at everything, Dr. Lyle.
Well,
you have it memorized.
I mean, I don't need to see it, but it'd be good for me to know what they're looking at. But that's fine. I know what it is.
Yeah, I thought I'd send it to you, but it's okay. It's no big deal.
Yeah, no worries.
We can.
I'm not sure. Is it the BF10?
Yes, the BF10.
Yes, okay. Yeah. I've looked at the BF10 a few years ago, and I can't remember what the order of the questions are, but it doesn't really matter. It's an amazingly simple device. So just to give people a little appreciation for this, this tiny little 10-question inventory is going to be better than any other device not using this underlying theory that you're going to take. So people are wasting their time with the Myers-Briggs, which is a joke. And yet that's by far the most used personality inventory, you know, in American industry and probably in a lot of other places as well. This is BF10, 10 little tiny questions, can be remarkably good even with such a cursory examination. And the reason for that is it is assessing. It's going right to what we consider to be five of the six major latent variables that are involved in the nature of human personality. So let's take a little quick review about what it is that we mean by this and what I mean by a latent variable. This is arrived at by a concept and a technique known as factor analysis. And so factor analysis is not a statistical technique that is used in the hard sciences. So that you aren't going to see factor analysis in chemistry, I don't believe, or physics or anything like that. You're going to see it in social science. And the reason is that we're looking for, human beings have a propensity to give 50 names for one idea. And let me give you an example. So an example would be intelligence. So we might have the word smart, we might have the word brilliant, have the word genius, moron, stupid, imbecile, etc. And all of these things are essentially measures or descriptions of a quantitative variation in a single underlying latent variable that we're going to call intelligence. So genius would be a whole lot of intelligence, imbecile, a very small amount. And so what they did in order to arrive at this was they actually investigators looked at thousands and thousands of words that human beings use to describe each other. So it turns out in the English language about somewhere near a third of the words that human beings know have to do with these descriptions. And so these are the adjectives that we look at each other and we have names for each other and we describe each other to each other using these words. Imbecile, stupid, genius, intelligent, bright, dull, you know, moron, idiot, et cetera, et cetera. So, and it's going to turn out that when you put all those names in a computer, so if you have someone describe all kinds of their peers, et cetera, it's going to turn out that you can essentially distill down. You don't have to ask somebody about whether someone is both bright, whether they're intelligent, whether they're an imbecile, whether they're a moron, whether they're stupid, et cetera. You just have to ask them one thing, and which is, how intelligent do you think they are? And that settles the issue. And so this is going to be what we call the latent variable or the latent factor that sits under thousands of adjectives. And it's going to turn out, I think there's about 3,000 adjectives in the English language that are commonly used for one central idea, which is intelligence. So there's going to be 5 more of these central ideas that have been found, and they are openness to experience. Here's another example of that. Adventurous, staid, conventional, wild. These are all different. These are all sort of dictating different places along a line of the line that we're going to call openness to experience. It's going to turn out that each of these variables isn't just on sort of a line that goes from low to high. It turns out that if we measure the population and how people describe, say, 1,000 people, it's going to turn out that it falls in a bell curve, which is just a thing of beauty. And when something falls in a bell curve, it's a telltale sign that biology is at work. So with intelligence, it's very clear from multitudes of evidence that intelligence is overwhelmingly a genetic in origin. And so it's no surprise that intelligence test scores fall in bell curves. The same thing is going to be true of the 5 latent variables that make up the human personality that we're going to call the Big 5. And so this test is 10 simple questions, 2 questions apiece, which give us 2 shots at estimating you or anybody else you know on the Big 5. And so there's 2 questions there that are going to relate to openness. 2 questions are going to relate to the concept of conscientiousness. 2 questions are going to relate to introversion, extroversion. 2 questions will relate to how agreeable you are. And 2 questions will relate to how emotionally stable or neurotic you are. So all you need to do is I think that test has you sort of agree strongly or disagree strongly and then agree or et cetera. So I think it's on essentially, is it a 5-point scale basically?
The one I'm looking at, the link I provided for the listeners, and unfortunately not you, again, apologies for that, is a 7-point scale. So it's disagree
seven
strongly, disagree moderately, disagree a little, neutral,
right.
Agree a little, agree moderately, agree strongly.
So that's what that's called, the 7-point, seven-point Likert scale or modified Likert scale, I can't remember. But anyway, this is just a standard scaling mechanism in the social sciences to give people latitude about how much they want to agree with something. And so then we can turn those into numbers. So we would go -3 on one side, then -2, then -1, then 0, then 1, 2, 3. And in this way, by assigning numbers to the responses that people give, we can statistically analyze this. In fact, they may even have you score it that way. Is that how they do it?
Yeah, you know what, now that you're explaining, I didn't take an advanced stats class, and I think you taught a stats class at Stanford, right?
Sure, yeah.
So I never knew how to score this, but now you're telling me. Yeah, on the bottom it says, here's how to score it, and it says number 1, and then 6R, so I guess this one should be reversed, and then that one,
right.
They tell you which ones to reverse and which ones not to reverse.
Right. They're going to reverse those questions so that they don't have a response bias, because some people just say extremely agree to everything. And so they kind of shake that out of the equation and by balancing the questions. So we're going to find out that my guess is they just go right down the Big 5. So what's the very first item? Read that for me.
The first item is extroverted, enthusiastic. And so this starts as, I see myself as extroverted, enthusiastic.
Okay, and so you either agree or disagree with that.
Yeah, let's just do mine as that.
Sure, why not?
All right, so
I'm going to actually quietly score you just for fun, and we're going to see whether an independent observer like agrees with your own self-analysis. So this is on extroverted, enthusiastic, and I'm going to put you – I know where I'm going to put you. I'm going to put you right there.
Okay, and then maybe
okay,
I won't
go
say
ahead.
Anything,
go.
And then, oh, you want me to say it out loud, or should I not say it, and then we see
what we
come up with?
No, go to the next one first.
What
do you score yourself
let me
on that one?
On extrovert enthusiastic, let's see.
Oh, wait,
I
don't tell
say,
me yet. I want to wait till we do the second item on
okay.
on that one.
I won't say
okay.
anything. Okay. The
yeah.
second item is critical and quarrelsome.
Okay, that would be essential, probably argumentative or agreeableness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
And
let me see. Let me score myself
on
that one.
So you score yourself on that one? Okay. Hold on a second. Let's see. Okay. So. Okay,
so
go
again,
ahead.
The choices are number one is disagree strongly, number two is disagree moderately, and then the last
yeah.
three are agreeing little. Yeah, okay.
Okay,
so
go ahead.
Number two is critical and quarrelsome. Number three, dependable and self-disciplined.
Dependable, self-disciplined, okay.
Okay.
Got it.
Okay,
got it.
Okay, number four is anxious and easily upset. Yeah, because I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, man, here I am on our podcast. You know, I can sense myself thinking, well, I want to bluff a little bit more, you know, a little better than I actually am because people are listening.
Sure.
Does this thing
I'm
account
what
for,
I think
for that?
The truth about you. We're going to have people. people will get your truth and then they'll get my truth. Okay. All right, go ahead.
But, yes, but does this survey, like, because, you know, when people take it on their own, it might be a little
yeah.
different than if, say, other people are listening. But we're going to get to see that,
sure.
right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so anxious and easily upset we did. The fifth one is open to new experiences and complex. Ooh, that one
okay,
sounds
got
cool.
it. All right, let's see.
Okay,
got it.
Okay, number six is reserved and quiet.
Okay, got it. Hold on a second. Okay, I got it.
And number seven is sympathetic and warm.
Interesting. Okay, go ahead.
Number eight is disorganized and careless. So I got a question about some of these. You
right.
know, when I go through all these, I think, you know, yeah, there's times when I'm such and such, you know, adjective, and sometimes when I'm not. So that's
right.
what seven are for, is that you just have to pick one, right?
Right. I would say
okay.
there. Okay. Go ahead.
Let me think a little bit. Disorganized and careless. Okay. And the ninth one is calm and emotionally stable.
Okay.
And then the tenth one, the last one, is conventional and uncreative.
Okay, I've got you.
All right. So here's the interesting thing. It's like when even say like the calm, emotionally stable one, sometimes
mm-hmm.
I'm like, you know, I feel calm on the outside, but I'm just like
sure.
in my head, I'm like, God, you know, upset at the guy you know, sitting at the traffic light and not going on the green light. And it doesn't feel like I'm
right.
very stable. So
right.
what's that?
yeah, what this is that – All we're measuring here is adjectives which describe you relative to other people.
Okay?
So these are all comparative. They don't mean anything unless we're comparing them to some kind of a baseline. And
mm-hmm.
the baseline that we are using is the average person that you know in the world.
Okay.
So if it turns out that let's suppose you're a software engineer and you work around a bunch of nerds. And many of them have even had, you know, I don't know, bazooka bubble gum. You know what I mean? So it's like, wow, you're the one that one day, you know, at an old girlfriend's that you had once smoked a cigarette once. That puts you out over the edge. Then you might mm-hmm. be thinking that you're more adventurous than you are in the world,
right.
Because your baseline is skewed relative to reality. So.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have basically a God's eye view of human nature, I know exactly where to score you.
Okay.
So actually, it's interesting because on a number of these, I, of course, as you should, find yourself ambivalent, you know, about one point, one direction or the other. Now, I didn't mm-hmm. have any ambivalence about, say, 2 points. In other words, so mm-hmm. I will be kind of entertained where you and I disagree by as much as 2 points on any of your scores. Okay?
Okay.
So go ahead and start with the extroversion, and you tell me where you put it.
Okay. So wait. So extroversion is 1 and 6 are. So number one, I put myself at 6. Agree moderately.
Okay. So Nate, you put yourself there. I put yourself at essentially a 5. So we have a one disagreement, which is good. Okay.
Okay.
So notice how good this is for people out there, because on a 7-point scale, a typical disagreement would be 3, okay, in principle, if it was random. So the fact that you and I are within 1 tells you that I know something about you. You know, this is likely to be a non-random effect, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right,
mm-hmm.
go to the next one, which is on the agreeable dimension.
By the way, I wanted to share with the listeners, so you have a really great video on your website called The Perfect Personality. And being the romantic Casanova that I am, when I dated girls after watching this video, I'd have them come over, we'd watch the video together, and then we'd like score each other on the personality characteristics, and that was like a romantic date for me, you know.
Now I have to redo some of my scores then, if that's what happened. Okay.
But it was
all
interesting,
right,
because we would score each other. Okay. So I'm getting off topic here. Okay. Number 6 is the other one.
The agreeable, the second question.
Oh, second question. I scored myself as
I think I lost
number
connection.
2 is critical. And
okay.
Can you hear me?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm lost or you're lost. I'm going to assume that I'm still connected and I'm going to just keep talking. So I'm going to wait for Nate to come back on. For those of you that could be scorekeeping, on the agreeable dimension, I'm going to my belief is that my perception is that he's at a +1, so he is. Let me think about this. It would be agreeable. Yeah, he's. I'll put him on +1 there. I think that's about right. It's close. Between that and 0 relative to the population. In other words, he's pretty close to the middle of the population, but maybe I'll put him at +1.
All right, I'm
on dependent. Oh, you're back. Okay. So what did you put on your agreeable?
For the number 2, critical and quarrelsome, I put agree moderately for being critical and quarrelsome.
Okay, so that's interesting. Moderately, which is not mildly, right? So that's
it's number 6 out of 7.
Okay, now that's interesting. So you and I actually have a fairly large dispute there, and I could tell the listeners why. I actually put you clear over. Wait a second. You said what's it called? It's called critical
and quarrelsome.
Yeah, I didn't. Table quarrelsome. Okay, so you put yourself over here. At 6, I put you at 5. Okay.
Okay.
So once
again
we have a one difference. Okay.
Okay.
That's good. So we are right in range. All right. So now we go to the next one, which is describe that.
Dependable.
For me.
Yeah, dependable and self-disciplined.
Okay.
I'd put myself as a 7.
All the way to the far, extremely dependable and et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I put
I'll flake out sometimes on people, but it's kind of rare. So
right, I put you at 6. Okay.
Okay.
Which is because sometimes your audio connections really are not that good, and you could have done something about it. All right. So
I wish I could take my blood pressure when that happens. It probably Goldhammer would be telling me to come in fast.
All right. So that's good. So once again, we are within 1 score. All right. So then the next one is what? Anxious, upset?
Anxious, upset. Okay. I put myself there as a 2, meaning I disagree moderately.
Right. And I put you as a is they disagree mildly. So once again, we're finding a kind of an interesting pattern here, and the pattern is that I score you a one closer to the middle than you do. So in every case, I believe that's what's happened, and we're going to see if that pattern continues, which wouldn't necessarily surprise us because this is actually a function of response bias of the different individuals, how they use the scale. Okay?
Okay.
So
Now
we're going to go to openness, which is the next question.
Yeah. Now that you say that, I put a 7, but I'm assuming you put a 6 or maybe even 5.
I did. That's exactly what happened. Okay? So we've now, 5 times in a row, we have seen that you and I see things in the same, you know, direction, but you score yourself more extreme, okay?
But I'm wondering
if this is
like the bias where my brain is, or my Stone Age brain is kind of displaying like, oh, it's nice to be open to experience, so I'll be a little bit more than I actually am. Or, oh, it's nice to be less anxious and less easily upset, you know what I mean? So it's an automatic display. No,
I think it's actually, it's probably more, you see this tendency to be the case. Is just simply that people use the scales differently. So when you look at social science survey data, you'll find whole hosts of people in a survey on, say, a 1 to 10 scale will never use a 1 or a 1 or a 2, and they'll never use a 9 or a 10. They'll score everything between 3 and 8. Okay? And then you'll see other people will use the whole scale. So that's I'm starting to see that possibility. I think that's a personality difference between you and I. All right. Reserved and quiet. Where'd you score
yourself?
I made
that a five. Agree a little.
Okay, so let me think about this. So read that thing for me.
Reserved and quiet, and I put myself
Yeah, so you put yourself over at 5. I put you at -1. At what would have been it starts at 0. How does that work? No, it starts at 1, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, I put you at 3. So that's the only one. So I see you as a little bit outgoing, and you see yourself as slightly introverted. Is that correct? Go ahead. So notice now, go back to question 1. Read question 1 again.
Extroverted and enthusiastic. So that's opposite.
Okay, and
right?
You put yourself up at 6 on that,
agree,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So I was struggling with that one because I a lot of the hobbies that I enjoy are where I'm quiet and there isn't a lot of noise going on, but I enjoy being around people.
Right. So that's why I put you
like fun people, not
3. And you, of course, messed up your own test, but that's okay. This is actually, interestingly enough, this is an example. So these were the two measurements of the introversion extroverted dimension. And so on one, you put yourself as, you know, 2 points above the middle for extroverted. And then on this one, you put yourself 1 point below. So on average, that would put you at very slightly or half a point above the midline. And I have you at actually exactly at the midline between my two scores.
So
actually, we're very
percentile.
Close. We're very close. So we actually have you essentially right at the middle of the graph. So we're in close agreement. All right. So the next one is going to be
sympathetic and warm.
Yes. Okay.
And now, I put that one as the +3. So agree strongly. Am I just screwing myself up here?
5, 6, 7. So you had yourself at agree strongly at +3. I actually had you at 0. excuse me, at 1, 2, 3, 4. So I had you at 4. So you're seeing yourself as much more agreeable than I see you, which is interesting. We'll see what the next one brings because we got 2 shots at it. All right.
Okay.
So the next one is disagreeable.
The next one is
right?
Disorganized and careless. And
okay,
that one is
so
a 4. So that one's right in the middle.
So you put yourself in the middle there, but I put you at a 2, okay? So now we're going to go back and we're going to look at the other angle of that, which is going to be, We don't have this disorganized. This is going to be conscientiousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that conscientiousness is going to be, let's see, critical. It's going to be dependable. So it's the third question.
Mm-hmm.
So the third question and this question are actually attempting to measure the same thing. So you measure yourself as plus three over there, and you measured yourself where on this one?
Right in the middle.
Right in the middle. Okay, so that would give you a plus 1.5 on average, plus 1.5 for Nate. I have you on, I have you at essentially 2 points above the midline on the disorganized one. In other words, I have that, and I have you 2 points above there. So I have you at a plus 2. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I score you as slightly more conscientious than you score yourself.
Hmm.
No, wait a second.
Okay.
I had you. Yeah, I think that's correct. So yeah, pretty close.
Okay.
All right. So now we're going to look at the next one, which is the calm. Calm and stable.
Calm and stable,
yeah.
Yep. So that one I scored myself as agree moderately. So basically plus 2 from the midline.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. So you have plus 2 in the midline. You had yourself, you disagreed with it by minus 2 on the below the midline on the anxious upset one on question 4. So that means you see yourself as pretty calm. Well above average. I saw you as essentially a 1, 2, 3 on the first question, and I saw you as in the middle on this one. So I actually have you at plus 0.5, so slightly above average. So I actually see you as more volatile than you see yourself. So you see yourself as a cooler head than I think you are. Now,
well, you're probably right,
though.
Me and my mom are kind of the same, and we get into some pretty escalated feuds sometimes. So.
Yeah. So
I'm determined it's because we're both slightly passionate or unstable,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, so there you go. So I actually – that's actually our biggest disagreement so far.
Okay.
And again, though, we see an example of you scoring yourself in a more extreme dimension away from the midline than I would.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the disagreement may not be as much as our intuitions would be looking at this if we're looking at it, okay? And so then the last one is conventional and uncreative, and where did you score that?
I put myself as a 3, so disagree a little.
1, 2, 3.
So it's
okay,
minus 1 away from the midline.
Right, I put you at 2, so I put you at 2 points below the midline, and that was – let's see where I put you with respect to, let me see, what would have been the other side of this? Oh, openness. So I put you at plus 2 and above the midline on openness on question 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then I put you at minus 2 below the midline on this. So mine is consistent. I see you as quite open. And you put yourself, let's see. On the openness, you put yourself clear over at 7 on the first time around, and then you put yourself where on this one?
Conventional
one
and uncreative.
Below.
I put myself, yeah, I disagree a little bit.
One below the midline, correct?
Yeah.
So you put,
yeah.
So therefore 3 is plus 3 minus 1 is plus 2, an average of plus 1, okay? So I actually see you as a little, wait a second, you're 1 plus 3 is 4. No, we actually agree completely. We have you averaged out at 2 above the midline. In other words, quite creative.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually agree very much, very close.
Mm-hmm.
And this is so this is interesting for our listeners because we totally scored these independently, and I'm completely ruthless. In other words, I'm going to put exactly what I think. And
that's true.
We have
based on our phone conversations,
yeah.
That's true, listeners.
and this is what it looks like. And so, yeah, if we disagree anywhere, I think you're a little more emotionally volatile than I. I think you're a little more volatile than you think you are. However.
Mm-hmm.
Part of this is also due to some differences that I might be looking at. When I think of you know, it depends on what one thinks or what's one intuition about what these different scores would look like on a bell curve. So I actually think you're fairly reasonably volatile and passionate. I think that two other factors come in and reduce the volatility there sort of independently. So it's not seen, but it's felt, which is your intelligence and your conscientiousness. So someone could be pretty emotionally volatile, but they could have enough conscientiousness and intelligence that they consistently override it enough that you don't see it that much, but it's there. And that's what I see in you. I don't think you're quite as calm as you think you are. So anyway,
You nailed it on the head. That seems just about right, actually.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, that's the story of the Big Five. And if we add an IQ estimate, which anybody can do that trivially, all you have to do is ask yourself, you know, how hard was high school? And then how hard was the hardest classes in high school? And where did I stack up relative to the smartest kids in the school, et cetera? You can pretty well put yourself easily in at least decile demarcations, top 10%, top 20%, top 30%, et cetera, down the line. That's pretty easy to do. I had an interesting conversation just to get outside of personality and wander over to intelligence just for a second, because people are remarkably touchy and fascinatingly quietly elitist and have a lot of strange thinking about intelligence. And this is propensity of human beings to ceaselessly seek order and dominance hierarchies. So everybody wants to know who the greatest basketball player was, well, not just now, but also of all time, and blah, blah, blah. And then they want to know who the greatest this was and that was. We want to have somebody at the top of which there is no dispute. This really cannot be done really with respect to any human ability, whether we're talking about Leonardo da Vinci painting or sculpting versus other people, et cetera. And it's sure as heck there's no way to do this with mathematics, physics, chemistry, psychology, sociology, anthropology, religion, or anything else under the sun. And you sure as heck can't do it with intelligence. Intelligence is a capacity of human beings to solve diverse problems that require computations of various kinds, including how well it is that you could paint, and including how well it is that you could put a basketball through a hoop. And it also includes the ability to do differential and integral calculus. In other words, it's all kinds of things. And it's going to turn out that when we measure all those kinds of things, these abilities have a tendency to hang together, but they don't hang together that well. So I don't think that Albert Einstein was much of an orator. Okay, his brain wasn't connected up to his mouth that well, and he probably didn't have that big a vocabulary. So nothing like a poet that's getting a master's degree from Swarthmore, for example. So intelligence needs to be thought of as sort of like beauty. It has all kinds of different dimensions to it, and there are people that are extremely beautiful, and there are people that are extremely intelligent. But even the people that are extremely beautiful, you could say, well, but, you know, if only he had a little bit more of a tan, or whether his hair was a little darker, or his shoulders were an inch broader, then he'd be just a little bit better. And so, oh, and so-and-so has better shoulders, or so-and-so, that girl has better bust than that one. So even though that one's more, quote, beautiful in the face, there's this and that. That's exactly what intelligence is. It's a multidimensional system that we can't accurately put it in a dominance hierarchy any more than you can effectively put beauty in a hierarchy. You sort of can, but ultimately when it gets down to fine gradations, you can't. So we throw that variable into the mix along with these things that we call the Big Five, and you pretty much have a profile for who it is that you are and who anybody else is. And this can be useful in all kinds of contexts, if nothing else, for your sheer entertainment, as you can see the patterns of your life, you know, in front of you, and you can think back on the stupid and brilliant things that you've done socially and otherwise, and you can see the track marks in the snow of where it is that those behaviors came from.
Yeah, it's all in our genes and our nervous system. Nothing we
can
do about it.
You can, sometimes people, just as a closing statement, sometimes people will be frustrated when they hear this argument. And they'll think, can't you change? Well, yes, you can change. But you're not going to change your personality. But you can change aspects of your life quite substantially. So the truth is that the human being and other animals has the capacity to learn and therefore alter their understanding of the adaptive landscape. So the more you know about how the world works, the more options and the more accurate your behavior becomes. So, for example, you could be a thug when you're 18 years old and you walk into liquor stores and you hold them up, and that's how it is that you, you know, get the money that you need to buy your cocaine, okay? You can end up figuring out 15 years later that that wasn't such a good idea, and that after repeated prices on that process are so great that you sort of hang it up and you decide, you know what, maybe you'd be better off to just get a decent job and just work, okay? So did the personality change? Well, the innate circuits did not change, but did the individual alter their understanding of the environment? Yeah. At 18 years old, their understanding of the environment was different. They didn't compute the risk-reward ratio very effectively. And as a result of that, they paid heavy prices until they eventually learned that that actually wasn't the optimal way to use their time and energy on Earth. And so you could say that their, quote, personality changed, but what really changed, in addition to obviously testosterone levels dropping, but that's a different issue. But what can actually change is the information base that's inside the system, and therefore the situations that they put themselves in, and therefore the behavior changes. You will see this very dramatically in, quote, shy people, who are extremely shy among novel strangers, but can be talkative just like little birds, chirping like little birds among their best four or five friends or their family. Okay, so if the context changes, the individual's behavior can change substantially. And so trying to find environments that are conducive to our personalities is one of the most important challenges and endeavors that we will do. Rather than try to change your personality, try to find ecological, social environments that are really good for you. That's what it is that we want to use this behind.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dr. Lau. Really appreciate analyzing the personality index. And if anybody's got any questions, we'll be happy to take them next week.
Very good.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.